It's January the 7th, 1998. Good evening. I'm William Cooper. I hope you have pen and pencil by your side tonight, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm going to give you a whole bunch of information. But before I get started, I want to read this letter that a friend of ours, Paul, sent to every member of the state legislature of Massachusetts. Personally, I think he was wasting his time because that's a bastion of Marxist socialism, headed, of course, by the extreme left-wing Kennedy family, of which Ted Kennedy is a shining, brilliant example of the kind of politics that they practice. John F. Kennedy's been dead for many years. He was not the president that you all thought he was. But we must do everything we can, even when it seems to be absolutely useless, so that we will not be found lacking in the final judgment. Here's what Paul said. Dear Representative Blank, whoever it was that he sent it to, in 1962, Mrs. Hughes, my sixth grade teacher, made this statement, quote, America can only be taken over by ballots, never by bombs and bullets, because there is a firearm in nearly every home. No army could ever invade our country and take it over by force, end quote. Do any of you have any idea what would happen to a teacher in any of our schools today if he or she made that statement? We were all proud of that then. What has happened to this once great and proud nation to change our belief in ourselves? In an address to the second session, First United States Congress, President George Washington said, quote, firearms stand next in importance to the Constitution itself. They are the American people's liberty teeth and keystone under independence. From the hour the pilgrims landed to the present day, events, occurrences, and tendencies prove that to ensure peace, security, and happiness, the rifle and pistol are equally indispensable. Every corner of this land knows firearms, and more than 99 and 99 100% of them, by their silence, indicate they are in safe and sane hands. The very atmosphere of firearms anywhere and everywhere restrains evil interference. They deserve a place of honor with all that's good. When firearms go, all goes. We need them every hour, end quote. The same holds true today. State police and FBI statistics prove it, but the Massachusetts legislature chooses to ignore the facts. James Madison said, quote, the Constitution preserves the advantage of being armed, which Americans possess over the people of almost every other nation, where the governments are afraid to trust the people with arms, end quote. In America, the people are the sovereign. Government is the servant. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. No government on earth has the authority to take them away, yet you propose to do exactly that. You profess to be lawmakers, yet you do not know the law. United States Code, 1988 edition, Title 10, Armed Forces, page 95, Chapter 13, The Militia, quote, small a. The militia of the United States consists of all able-bodied males at least 17 years of age and under 45 years of age who are or who have made a declaration of intent to become citizens of the United States, end quote. George Mason said, quote, I ask, sir, what is the militia? It is the whole people. To disarm the people is the best and most effectual way to enslave them, end quote. This is not a game. The Second Amendment does not pertain to hunting or target shooting, as some would absurdly suggest. President Thomas Jefferson, quote, The strongest reason for the people to retain the right to keep and bear arms is, as a last resort, to protect themselves against tyranny in government, end quote. Are you willing to go down in history as a member of the Massachusetts legislature that attempted to deprive the people of their liberty teeth by banning them within one generation, end quote? Sorry, folks, that was not a quote. That's my friend Paul. All creatures are endowed by their creator with unalienable rights. If you pick up an ant, it will attempt to use its unalienable right to self-preservation to stop you. People have the same right, but without tools, the human race would have been extinct long ago. Firearms are excellent tools when used properly as a means of self-preservation. You can no more legislate that right away from the people than you can from the ant. If even 10% of the citizens of Massachusetts wake up and see through your ill-advised actions, you will face the wrath of 600,000. Are you willing to face them? When the legislature of New Jersey passed an assault weapons ban, citizens ignored the law. A law that does not conform to the Constitution is no law from its inception. Governor Florio and all legislators voting for the measure were voted out of office at the very next election. Please do whatever it takes to defeat the semi-auto ban. If I am walking down the road and someone yells, "Stop, thief," it does not bother me, for I know I am not a thief. If you are not a tyrant, this letter will not bother you. If you are, it is designed to alert you and make you think before you go too far. This letter, gentlemen, implies no threat to any Massachusetts legislator who is upholding his own oath of office. Respectively, Paul. How about that? Don't go away, folks. I'll be right back with some information that's going to peel the paint right off your wall.
Never in women's history has so few taken so much from so many as America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these banksters and international government gangsters took us from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on earth. Our standard of living has dropped like a rock for 4 out of every 5 Americans. They have foreclosed on our homes, our farms, our factories. They've exploited your jobs and surrendered our arms.
They want
you. A new world order. You to be a slave from birth to grave. The banksters own the Federal Reserve. It's private. They own it. It's neither federal nor a reserve. The cashists make that fiat funny money stuff you call dollars for 2 pennies. They lend it back to us at full face value. Then charge you interest. You get the debt. They get the interest. They get the gold.
You get the trap.
A new world order. A new world order. A new world order. It is a big idea.
Is the
chapter. In a nutshell, 1994. CFR controls the CIA, the FBI, the ATF, and the FDA. They don't give a damn about the POW and the MIA. Hillary, Billary, Hitler, Marx, and Mao. They want a new world order. They want it all. And they want it now. This Illuminati imports the dope. They create the chaos, strain us out, crush our hope. They created AIDS, put their designer disease to bring you down, to grovel on your knees. They want to vaccinate your child and give them the mark. They want to eliminate you and keep you in the dark. They want you to pay for it with plastic, surrender your soul. They want you under their thumb, under their control. A new world order. A new world order. A new world order.
Yes, folks, they do want it all, and you have not even begun to come close to even imagining for one moment the level of control and brainwashing that you are being subjected to in order to bring all of this about. Well, I'm going to give you a little bit more tonight. This is an article written for the Executive Intelligence Review in the November 14, 1997 issue of Strategic Studies. The author is Anton Chaykin, an extremely well-versed researcher. Many of you have been calling me and asking me about the Promise Keepers for months and months and months. Well, tonight you're going to find out. We have been looking into them for quite a while. And so have a whole bunch of other people. I can tell you right now that everything you're going to hear in this article is 100% correct. And if you don't believe it, you check it out for yourself. Remember, my admonition is always, listen to everyone. Read everything. Believe absolutely nothing unless you can prove it in your own research. And if you can't, either prove it true or false, you had better not believe anything about it. This is the age of deception. And folks, the lies are so deep that if you're not an extremely tall person, you're likely to drown in them. Here goes. Pay attention. These days, when an army of men stands in a football stadium or on the Washington Mall chanting Jesus slogans, weeping, each man hugging the next man and purging his sins in front of a giant video altar, they are in general unaware of who it is that has amassed this army and brought them there. The Promise Keepers is an American-based project of utopian military and related religious and political operatives associated with British imperial strategy and the George Bush machine, which means, literally, the Central Intelligence Agency. We will detail here some of the key personnel and the New Age sexual brainwashing they use to manufacture this movement. This exposure is essential because the project has been consistently boosted by the mainstream media with no investigative journalism to find out what was really going on. ABC News anointed Promise Keepers founder, frontman Bill McCartney, a former University of Colorado football coach, as their Person of the Week in February 1996. The Eastern Establishment Press lavishly promoted the October 1997 rally in Washington, D.C., ending with a cover story in Time magazine. Press coverage of criticism from feminists, lesbians, and atheists only served to promote the project. The Promise Keepers experiment was begun on 70 Colorado men in 1990 About 4,000 turned out to rallies in 1991. As attendance grew to 22,000 in 1992, the project leaders arranged for the writing of a bizarre book intended to mold the emotions and self-conception of their now growing mass following. Masculine Journey was written for the Promise Keepers by Lieutenant Colonel Robert Hicks, a military expert in religious terrorism. It was published in 1993 under the supervision of Hicks Air Force colleague General Jerry White, a specialist in military mobilization, military police, and electronic security. General White is the longtime chairman of a military ministry group called The Navigators, whose Nav Press published the book and a companion study guide for Promise Keepers psychological trainers. You will hear me throughout this article sometimes refer to PK. Those are the initials of Promise Keepers. Hicks' book was distributed to every one of the 50,000 men who assembled for the first PK mass rally held at the University of Colorado's Folsom Field. This free distribution was unique since PK usually charges its men high prices for group clothing items, worship accessories, and commercial aids to male bonding. Promise Keepers then mass marketed Masculine Journey and its study guide through 1994, when about 275,000 people came to PK rallies, and 1995 when attendance hit 725,000. By 1995, the Hicks book had come under increasing criticism. Promise Keepers stopped publicly selling the book, but they continued to endorse it for their inductees who buy it from Nav Press. Under a veneer of Bible chapter and verse citations, Masculine Journey is pagan psychological manipulation akin to the New Age pornographic training that shaped the lesbian and Wicca upsurges of the 1960s. Its techniques are congruent with those developed by the British military and intelligence services through the Tavistock Psychiatric Institute, a pivotal agency in introducing the drug rock sex counterculture to the United States of America. The author, Lieutenant Colonel Robert Hicks, is an intelligence community professional in the field of post-traumatic shock. The Tavistock Institute, pioneer in this field, viewed public shocks such as the Vietnam War and the 1960s multiple assassinations as the opportunity to radically alter the philosophy of the American population. The current societal breakdown, with the stimulus of PK Nuremberg-style rallies, gives this mind-bending a fair chance to succeed. Hicks teaches religious terrorism to officers at the Air War University at Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama. In that military course, he explains the mental path that Christian identity and other varieties of British Israelite race cultists are induced to travel, and similarly with Jewish fanatics, Kak, Kahani, and Kai, Islamic suicide bombers, and Japanese Armageddonist terrorists. His Masculine Journey complements and competes with radical feminism, making the genitals the center of the Promise Keeper's psyche. The book explains, and I quote, "Possessing a penis places unique requirements upon men before God. We are called to worship God as phallic kinds of guys, not as some sort of androgynous neutered non-males or the feminized males so popular in many feminist enlightened churches. We are told by God to worship Him in accordance with what we are, phallic men," end quote. If you think pornography is an organized crime racket, you probably haven't considered it as a phase of worship. Listen to this, as Hicks writes, and I quote, "I remember staring at an ancient Hawaiian statue when my wife questioned, 'Why is it so large?' Her question was related to the size of the protruding phallus. To me, there was very little difference between this Hawaiian idol image and the artifacts that are sold regularly in adult bookstores. I'm sure someday future archaeologists will dig up the adult toys from our current society and view them as elements of our religious worship. And they will be right, because that's precisely what they are and always have been. The phallus has always been the symbol of religious devotion and dedication. Professor George Elder notes, "Phallus, like all great religious symbols, points to a divine reality that cannot be apprehended otherwise. It is not as a flaccid member that this symbol is important to religion, but as an erect organ," end quote. Hicks says this on the naked Jew, quote, "Every Israelite, when looking at himself naked, was reminded of how different, circumcised he was from the Gentiles, and for what purpose. In this sense, his sexuality took on spiritual significance. Every time he used his penis, he was making a spiritual statement about who he was and who he worshipped and why," end quote. This is what Hicks says on the playful pleasure of homosexuality, and I quote, "God obviously knew men would be put into situations where this would be a very real temptation, whether it be men at sea for months at a time, or men in prisons, or adolescent boys playfully experimenting with each other. Situations can create the temptation. The pleasure experienced in those playful moments, or the bonding that occurs through the first experience, subsequently repeated, does not change the reality of the creational order. I have often counseled gay men on my observation that even in their sexual relations with each other, they must find a substitute opening for their penis. For a man to have satisfactory sex, he must find an opening for his penis. In rejecting the God-given opening of the woman, the homosexual merely affirms what he thinks he is denying whenever he finds an alternate opening. And if men are going to bond PK style, they'll need to visualize Jesus nude." Jesus was also very much Zachar, phallic. Jesus was very much masculine, and masculine means being male. And being male means having a penis. There's no way around it. Some in church history could not tolerate the exposure of the Son of God's genitalia. Therefore, you will never find a portrait of the crucifixion of Jesus with penis exposed, even though it was a common Roman custom to crucify criminals naked. Even the gospel writers tell us that Jesus' outward garment was torn into four pieces, leaving the inner tunic, which was then gambled for intact. That left nothing, no underpants, nothing, end quote. Promise keepers are told that homosexuality is an inherent passion even in Jesus Christ. Quote, right straight from the mouth of Hicks, quote, "I believe Jesus was phallic with all the inherent phallic passions we experience as men, but it was never recorded that Jesus had sexual relations with a woman. He may have thought about it, as the movie The Last Temptation of Christ portrays. If temptation means anything, it means Christ was tempted in every way as we are. That would mean not only heterosexual, but also homosexual temptation. I have found this insight to be very helpful for gay men struggling with their sexuality," end quote. Find this a little hard to bear, folks? Well, so do I. But this is exactly what they teach, what they preach, what they write, and what they do. I continue with the article. Based on the archetypes of the satanic occult psychiatrist Carl Jung, the PK book calls for today's Christians to recreate pagan-modeled phallic initiation rites to celebrate personal milestones. In an appendix summarizing the book's argument, Hicks lists some of these personal spiritual breakthroughs. The first time for wet dreams, appearance of pubic hair, masturbation and intercourse. Hicks intersperses this poison with homilies about staying faithful to your wife. Promise Keepers spokesman Pete Richardson defended masculine journey in an April 7, 1995 letter replying to questions from Al Dagher of Media Spotlight. Now, Media Spotlight, folks, is not the Spotlight. Different altogether. Question. Quote, Dr. Hicks has been quoted as saying that men should worship Jesus with their phallus. Isn't this a blasphemous statement? Why should someone associate Jesus with sexuality? Here's their answer. Quote, this raises two issues. First, the nature of worship, and second, the issue of associating Jesus with sexuality. The idea of worshiping Jesus with one's sexuality grows out of Dr. Hicks' understanding of the nature of the book of Leviticus. End quote. Richardson elsewhere describes the book as a biblically centered, frank, and honest account of a man's journey with God. His own words. So what are the origins of the Promise Keepers? Whose project is this? The operatives who make up the PK leadership were developed in several phases. The first was in the post-World War II years, when British Allied banker Averell Harriman directed the United States military and intelligence reorganization along with John Foster Dulles, globalist religious leader and Secretary of State, and his brother Alan Welch Dulles, director of the Central Intelligence Agency. The last preparatory phase involved the military mercenary covert operations under George Bush as vice president and president. George's father, Prescott Bush, was a partner of Averell Harriman. The Dulles brothers were their lawyers. David Duplessis, an agent for the Anglo-Dutch monarchies and for their turncoat American intelligence allies, supervised Pentecostalism's charismatic renewal with agencies such as the Full Gospel Businessmen's Fellowship and the Far East Broadcasting Company. The same intelligence apparatus spun out Bill Bright's Campus Crusade for Christ in 1951 and Pat Robertson's Christian Broadcasting Network in the 1960s. Bill Bright, heavily funded by billionaire misanthrope Nelson Bunker Hunt and commanding 13,000 paid staff and 100,000 global volunteers. Having trouble turning this page. Volunteers for his Campus Crusade now sponsors Promise Keepers. Pat Robertson fervently pushes Promise Keepers on his 700 Club television show. Coach Bill McCartney launched Promise Keepers after being recruited into the Vineyard Christian Fellowship, a depraved third-wave Pentecostal venture. Vineyard's leader, former rock musician John Wimber, is one of the operatives produced by the old Duplessis Dulles machine through Fuller Theological Seminary in Pasadena, California. Vineyard set up churches notorious for their barking, shrieking, and retching worshipers at Toronto Airport and in Pensacola, Florida. Stephen Strang, publisher of the Promise Keepers glossy magazine called New Man, also puts out Charisma, organ of the third wave and herald of every British intelligence project, even faintly related to religion, Christian, environmentalism, etc. I'll take a brief pause here because I need a drink of water, folks, and you need to probably digest a little bit what you've been hearing. Don't go away. We'll be right back with the rest of this astounding information.
Come, Many of you may not understand why I'm fond of playing that particular musical selection, not just by this artist, which was Bette Midler, but by anybody who sings it from time to time on this broadcast. And on some broadcasts, when I really delve into the deepest, darkest mystery of those that are behind the destruction of the United States of America and the enslavement of the world, I may use three different versions in one broadcast, as some of you already know. The Rose, ladies and gentlemen, one American beauty rosebud, symbolizes the promise and the infancy of the secret destiny of America, which is to create world government. Didn't know that, did you? Is also the symbol of international socialism. You didn't know that either, did you? And that's why you see prominent socialists fond of holding one single red rose. That's why they give everyone, or gave everyone, I should say, who attended the memorial service for those who died in the bombing of the Oklahoma Mural Federal Building, one red American beauty rose as they entered the auditorium. Think about it. I continue with Anton Chaykin's article on the Promise Keepers. Let us now observe the efforts of this gang to penetrate the United States military, aided by the Bush machine already in place. In February 1996, a Promise Keepers gathering of thousands of clergymen in Atlanta, Georgia, featured a special meeting for recruiting military chaplains. Air Force General Richard Abel, retired, who manages Bill Bright's military penetration ministry, addressed this meeting, as did Lieutenant Colonel Chuck Stecker, retired, a 23-year Army Special Forces veteran who now manages the Promise Keepers organization in Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, and Tennessee. Following the chaplain's meeting, a Promise Keepers rally was held for hundreds of soldiers on the Fort Bragg, North Carolina Army base, home of the Special Forces units. That rally was led by Colonel Jim Pack, retired, a psychological warfare specialist who now manages the Promise Keepers operations in Texas. Colonel Pack spent 25 years in Army Special Forces. This is the United States service force deeply infected with British imperial philosophy in the tradition of T.E. Lawrence of Arabia, Ord Wingate, and Dennis Sefton Delmer, the fascist British intelligence black arts practitioner who lectured at Fort Bragg in 1962. Special Forces veterans and Air Force kooks of the Robert Hicks variety are heavily represented among the leaders and agents provocateurs in the militia and separatist movements. Homoerotic specialist Hicks, we note, also trains military chaplains at Maxwell Air Force Base. In a 1995 interview quoted in June 1995 in The Heritage, a Protestant newsletter, Colonel Pack defended the Promise Keepers' privacy-stripping psychological techniques derived from Hicks' book and explained, and I quote, "There are probably men out there that probably need almost an electrical jump start to get their engines going before they're willing to confront anything," end quote. Colonel Pack referred to the, quote, "People Bingo," end quote, quiz specified in the study guide to Masculine Journey. The small group leader asks each man to reveal which of the following apply to him, quote, "Is wearing boxer shorts or bikini briefs, has been arrested at least once, has made most of his funeral arrangements, is going through a midlife crisis, has had circumcision, vasectomy, or prostate operation, was neglected or abused by father," end quote. In the build-up to the 1997 Promise Keepers Washington rally, inquiring journalists interacted with National Capital Region PK manager Mike McDaniel. He could be counted on to prevent embarrassment to the project. McDaniel was formerly executive director of the American Defense Institute, a military lobbying group close to the Heritage Foundation. ADI was founded by McDaniel's father, Eugene Red McDaniel, the Navy and the Marines liaison to Congress. The McDaniels are decent but limited individuals who are being used by the cultists. Preparing for the big Washington event, Promise Keepers stepped up its outreach to African Americans, using a growing pool of proto-fascists and military specialists. Joining the PK board in 1996 was Lieutenant General Alonzo E. Short, Jr., retired, an African-American Pentecostal who was commanding general of the United States Army Information Systems Command, an intelligence gathering service. During 1990, General Short was commander of Fort Huachuca, Arizona, the training center for United States military intelligence officers. Wellington Boone is an African-American Promise Keepers cult guide, frequent PK speaker and editorial board member of New Man. He wrote in Charisma this brainwasher's credo, quote, "We are called to be worms. A worm never protests. Can you say, for Christ, I am a worm and am no man?" If we allowed God to work into us the idea of worm training, it would be revolutionary. We would gain a worm's eye view of what God wants when we really meet Jesus and allow ourselves to be crushed as we model his example. The impact will rock this world, end quote. Lawrence Reed, PK regional manager for all the states from West Virginia to Maine, was formerly the financial manager for Worm Boone's Personal Ministries Enterprise. Boone is also a leader of the Coalition on Revival, a Christian Reconstructionist grouping calling for abolition of public schools, capital punishment for violations of the Bible, and an outright theocracy. Frequent PK African American speakers, Joseph Carlington of Pittsburgh, an ally of Richard Mellon Scaife, and John Perkins of Pasadena, California, a board member of New Man, are both core leaders of the Fascist Coalition on Revival. Let the foregoing facts, then, give warning. Before your husband, brother, or son is herded into a mass religious rally or submits to personal questioning by a PK trainer, you and he must go beyond, quote, sincerity of feelings, end quote, and beyond blind disappointment over the collapse of our society, lest you foolishly contribute to that collapse. Now, you've all heard who's involved in this, who the leadership is, where it originated, and how it is being run, what is being taught, what they write, and what they say. And I'm going to tell you, as an ex-member of the Office of Naval Intelligence, this is a brainwashing experiment, if I've ever seen one in my life. I have no idea what the end result is, but I guarantee you that sometime in the future, we will all find out. So I would advise you, and of course you don't have to take my advice, to stay away from the Promise Keepers. If you know somebody who's in the Promise Keepers, try civilly, with decency and with respect for their right to practice whatever religion they choose, to get them out of it. If they refuse, leave them alone, because that's their right. And if you think the comments in the article about Pat Robertson were off the mark, again, you're not using what God put between your ears. Two pilots who flew more than 100 charity missions in Zaire, for Pat Robertson, said that the televangelist used most of the flights to run a diamond hunting scheme. And I did a broadcast on this a long time ago. In fact, I was the only one who broke this story in media anywhere in the world for a couple of years. In interviews on May 7, 1997, with a reporter, pilots Robert Hinkle and Tahir Brohi described their flights in Caribou cargo aircraft, a fleet purchased with funds donated to Robertson's Operation Blessing. Contributors to that tax-exempt charity were told they were paying for the evangelization and medical relief of suffering Africans. During 1994 and 1995, Operation Blessing Cargo Planes carried equipment and supplies for the river dredging of diamonds on behalf of the African Development Company. Pat Robertson is the sole owner. It was he who had chartered that company in 1992. It suspended operations in October 1995. Before then, Chief Pilot Hinkle had quit in disgust at Robertson's fraud and deception. Hinkle told reporters that he flew about 40 missions for the Robertson Organization, headquartered in Goma, Zaire. Hinkle set up the cargo flying operation and hired others, including pilot Tahir Brohi. Hinkle told of his flights from Injili Airport near Kinshasa and from Indolo, around 15 miles away, to Shikapa, some 200 miles into the interior. Hinkle observed Robertson's attempts to pick diamonds out of fast-flowing river currents. When he failed to get much more than industrial-grade diamonds, Robertson launched legal action against the United States company that had supplied the dredging equipment. The diamond hunting was near the Zaire-Angola border. Hinkle said he had heard Robertson's aides discussing buying diamonds from smugglers operating between Angola and Zaire. In one instance, Hinkle recalled, he flew Robertson into a landing in Angola. On that trip, he told reporters Robertson discussed with Angolans Robertson's project to rebuild a railroad from mineral-rich Shaba province, Zaire, through to the Atlantic Ocean port in Lobito, Angola. The Wall Street Journal reported on April 30th that Max Boole, boss of the Canadian-based American Mineral Fields Mining Company, which is plundering Zaire on behalf of the British Empire's Anglo-American Corporation, has asked Robertson to go back into action with the Shaba-Lobito Rail Link project. The journal reported that Boole believes that, quote, anyone able to win a concession to rehabilitate and run the railroad could make a fortune if Zaire's copper and cobalt industries are revived, end quote. The journal quoted a Robertson spokesman, quote, Mr. Robertson's main concern is for the spiritual needs of the Zairean people, end quote. Oh, what fools these mortals be. Tahir Brohi, who flew for Robertson from November 1994 through September 1995, told reporters that he made one or two flights a week. The majority of these, he said, were related to the diamond dredging. One of Brohi's flight bases was the Zaire port city of Matadi on the Congo River. Writing in the Richmond, Virginia Times-Dispatch on February 1st, Robertson explained that his Zaire operation was undertaken on President George Bush's request. Quote, before a visit to Zaire, I met with George Bush in the White House and asked his advice, end quote. Bush told him he should go into business in Zaire, allegedly, according to Robertson's story, in order to save Zaire's government. Quote, I brought with me, Robertson wrote, a former Undersecretary of State from the Bush administration for the purpose of advising Zaire's president, Mobutu Sese Seko, on fiscal and monetary issues. I personally met with the cabinet of Zaire and warned them that if they continued printing money, there would be runaway inflation with rioting and looting in the streets, end quote. Robertson evangelized with advice to lay off workers and to give away the national patrimony to foreign looters. Quote, I analyzed the Gecamine copper mines, where I discovered 16,000 surplus workers, and the government-owned Kilimoto gold mines, where 3,300 workers produced a pitiful quantity of gold, and the government-owned industrial diamond facility in Mbuji, Mei, where I discovered production limping along at 50% of peak capacity. End quote. after Mobutu was overthrown and the mass murderer Laurent Kabila took over to give away all resources to the London mining cartel, Pat Robertson invited Kabila to come to the United States as Pat Robertson's guest. So much for caring for the spirituality of the Zairean peoples. And I could go on and on and on. Pat Robertson's ministry is actually promoting the New World Order, ladies and gentlemen. The emblem that he displays quite prominently, the cross in the crown, is the symbol of the unification of church and state, which I guarantee you, if it ever happens, will bring religious persecution the likes no one ever saw in the Dark Ages, because they didn't have the technology and the methods that they can use to ferret out heretics in this modern day. And just because you're a Christian, don't think that that would save you. It would not. Look around at how many tens of thousands of different denominations, dogma, teachings, etc. exist within the category called, quote, Christian, end quote. Which one will they choose to be the state religion? Whichever one it is, if you don't agree with it 100%, you will be persecuted and eventually eliminated. That's the nature of religion and government when they marry. Pat Robert Robertson wrote a book called The New World Order. He says his name is on the cover. The truth is he did not write it at all. He hired someone else to write it for him. They were not his ideas. He spent no time on the book whatsoever. The ghost writer wrote the book 100% from beginning to end. If you don't believe that, call Pat Robertson's ministry and ask them. They'll tell you that it was written by a ghostwriter. Nothing in the book reveals anything whatsoever. Does not name the enemies of the Republic at all. It is a harmless attempt. Because so many people were calling Pat Robertson every day on the telephone and asked him why he did not oppose the New World Order. This was what he held up to the public as a ruse so that he could show that he had done something. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the truth. But like I always tell you, don't believe me. Don't believe me. Listen to everyone. Read everything. Believe absolutely nothing unless you can prove it in your own research. An awful lot here that we could talk about regarding Diamond Pat Robertson. But I don't have time to do that today. Maybe we'll do it on some other broadcast. Now, folks, don't take me wrong. I'm not trying to tell you what God to worship, what church to go to, or what religion to believe in. Those are protected rights, unalienable rights. And every American has the right to make his own decision, make a fool out of himself, ensure that he spends all eternity in hell, or dies and becomes nothing but a wisp of smoke, or goes to heaven, is accepted or rejected by whatever God you believe in, that's your right. But ladies and gentlemen, when I see American people being deceived, lied to, and manipulated, I'm going to tell you about it. Because any choice that you make must be made knowing the facts, knowing the truth, or at least having had an opportunity to learn the truth before you make a choice that you might regret sincerely many years down the road. I believe in freedom. I believe in liberty. I believe that every man should be able to do whatever they choose to do so long as they do not injure the person or property of any other human being. And that goes for man, woman, or child. Children, being immature, have to be under the protection, supervision, and discipline of their parents until they are. I watched today on television the forewoman, or the foreman, as she is called, of the jury that convicted Terry Nichols of conspiracy and involuntary manslaughter. They were unable to reach a decision as to the punishment or the sentencing of Terry Nichols. He came into the courtroom this morning and so informed the judge, who dismissed the jury and said that he would decide the sentence. I have no idea what the sentence is going to be. I think that Terry Nichols was involved. In fact, through our investigation, I know he was involved. I just don't know to what extent. I was not in the courtroom. I did not see or hear all the facts presented by either the prosecution or the defense, and so I cannot tell you the extent of his guilt, nor will I attempt such a thing. That's the job of the jury. But it was interesting to hear the jury foreman Sorry about that, folks. I had to turn the sound off while I took a drink of water. My throat is becoming very dry in this cold weather and is beginning to tickle, signifying a fit of coughing will come forth if I don't do something. She literally indicted the United States government. She said their investigation was flawed, their testimony was flawed, their questioning of witnesses was flawed, that what witnesses say they told the FBI and what the FBI said the witnesses told them were two different things, that she believed there were others involved, including John Doe's number 2, 3, 4, and etc., and that the government was making no effort to find them. This was an enormously important statement for her to make. And if any of you happen to record that interview today, I had no idea that such a thing was going to come out of her mouth, and so I was not ready to record. And by the time I got a tape into the machine, it was all over with. If any of you recorded her statements today on CNN, please send me a copy, and I will be happy to reciprocate and send you back whatever you wish that we have here that we can give you. And I sincerely mean that. Another hour has gone by, ladies and gentlemen, and once again I have given you much more than food for thought. So, at this time, I will bid you good night, and God bless each and every single one of you.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door. Hey, hi. Something's not right.
Throw out your arms. Let your step well pass through. We're here from the government. We're here to help you.
I'm from the IRS with a power to tax. Did you guys complain? Stay in the back.
Get out of this house. Surrender your guns. Give me your gold. You can obey if you want to come home. Dance the gunstone and do what you're told.
Hillary Salala, Reno Janet Dyke, reading the words of General Albert Pike, demonic founder of the Ku Klux Klan, engineer of the Masonic Master Plan.
Pike sends Lucifer as God across this land. And Clinton's saying, hit the mark in your right hand. While we're all dancing to the drums of uproar, right? Clinton's preparing it for another huge tax hike. Order out of chaos, depression, inflation, creates a panic and rapes the nation.
You've been listening to The Hour of the Time with yours truly, William Cooper, which is an educational presentation of the Independence Foundation Trust, a charitable trust set up by the Cooper family for the benefit and the service of the community in which we live. This is 101.1 FM Eager, classic radio like you always wished it could be.